We're already talking films off the air.
Yeah. We might as well do it on the air. It'd be silly to have Patrick McDonald in and not discuss this on the air. Patrick, how are you?
Great. How are you?
Excellent. Patrick, of course, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com and chief guide for ChicagoFilmTour.com. People still have time if they want to see the tour. It's the weather's still pleasant. Go
That's
see
right.
it, right?
Featured on Fox 32 this week,
oh, congratulations.
By the way. Yes.
Very, very nice.
Yes.
If you wouldn't mind.
No problem.
America lost two great comedians last weekend,
yes.
Dick Gregory and Jerry Lewis. Jerry Lewis plays a big part in the world of film, doesn't he?
Oh, he certainly does. Not only did he make over 50 films as an actor, but he was acknowledged, especially in the 60s, he was sort of the first one to come out as a director and say, here's some procedural stuff to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a book called The Total Filmmaker. Interesting, filmmaker is spelled F-I-L-M-maker being capitalized.
Mm-hmm.
A very unusual spelling of that word, but that tells you the early days. And he also taught a course at UCLA that was attended by Mr. Steven Spielberg, Mr. George Lucas.
Hmm.
In fact, one of Spielberg's early films, Amblin, which he named his production company
after,
Lewis, after he showed it, said, now this is a filmmaker.
Why is he so polarizing, do you think?
Because he can't keep his mouth shut. His big mouth shut.
Yeah.
Yeah. He says things off the cuff and, you know, lives to regret them, basically.
Yeah.
Or now he won't.
So many filmmakers and comedians paid tribute to him after
yes.
he died over the weekend. And many, I'll use Jim Carrey as a perfect example,
yep.
said that without him, without Jerry Lewis, Jim Carrey wouldn't have gone into the line of work he went into.
Well, it just is academic whenever you see a rubber-faced comedian that they are the protege of Jerry.
Yeah.
You know, you think about his early days and how manic he was. It's just, it invented a new way of being a comedian, basically. I think.
Why did France take a liking to him more than the United States?
That does seem weird, though, because he was goofball, and
yeah.
they seem more, I don't know, not reserved, but...
I think the extreme nature of his comedy, basically.
Yeah.
They were, again, I think that's a good point. They are a reserved culture. So to see somebody express themselves like that was very entrancing to the French and...
They weren't used to it. It was
joke.
Something different.
The old joke. See, Jerry kind of took himself out of the U.S., I think, during the 70s when he was in that pharmaceutical haze.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was increasingly manic on those telethons, and you're just like, what's happening to this guy?
Right.
You know?
We talked about several of his films on Monday,
right.
but I want to bring up just one or two really quickly.
Yes.
The Day the Clown Cried is one of the most famous stories in film history. He made a movie about a clown who his job was to lure children in the death camps to their ends.
Is that based, forgive my ignorance, is that based on a true story?
Well, I guess a legend or something, because it was remade sort of as Life is Beautiful.
Yeah.
So obviously there were stories going around. I don't think it's based on a true story.
But why? Life is Beautiful is a magnificent
yes.
film and very sensitive. And from what we know about this film, and I guess you can see the whole thing now on YouTube.
Yeah, it's
up
there.
It was a hidden.
Really?
Yeah. I saw that it's. I don't know how long it is, but it was almost like...
I've never seen all of it.
Clips. They used some clips in the A&E bio of him.
Oh, did they?
And I think that is the only evidence of the movie that exists. Now, the legend is that Jerry is put in a vault
right.
and does not want anybody to see it. There has been a few people who have seen
Harry
it.
Harry Shearer of Harry The Simpsons Sherry, says he
of course.
Has seen it. Yeah.
Yes. And
that it lives up to its billing as one of the worst movies of all time. Because Jerry didn't know if he was making a comedy or a tragedy,
yes.
and he tried to mix both, and it just didn't work.
Yes, and he lost financing, and basically he never got to formulate the film. I mean, to be fair to Jerry, he did not make a complete film. He made an idea for a film, started
yeah.
it, and never got to bring it to fruition. And it was supposed to be his breakout.
Yeah.
And... Never came to see the light of day, and he was adamant about nobody ever seeing it. So
yeah.
hopefully there's a console in as well where all the footage will be released. And again, I think by the time that happens, we will have moved on to an extent where it's not going to live up to its promise.
The other movie Wendy and I discussed the other day was Hardly Working, which was a movie that Roger Ebert, who wrote a whole book about bad films and reviews, went out of his way. Roger Ebert went out of his way to just say, how in the world could anyone make this movie? It was so awful.
Well, again, I think that was at the point of his pharmaceutical haze. He made Hardly Working and Cracking Up as two of his last two directorial efforts. You can tell that they're low budget. I have a great story about Hardly Working. It was in Bloomington, Indiana, where I saw that film during college. And the film, the place that we were seeing it was just falling apart, one of those old theaters. And a whole section of the roof came crashing down onto the seats.
And that was the second most tragic thing going on
of Hardly Working. We had to leave after that.
So is there a new breed of Jerry Lewis? Does this generation have somebody
him? That's a good question. I think you just see it in whenever you see something extreme, like, Jim Carrey being the prime example. Can you think of extreme
to
films?
Some extent, we mentioned Life is Beautiful.
Yes.
Roberto Benigni kind of channels him in that movie quite a bit. Mr. Bean, to some extent, is Jerry Lewis.
Yes. You
know? Mr. Bean is funny.
Mr. Bean is very funny.
I don't know why.
Now, you think Jerry Lewis is funny?
I don't.
I have to say I do, but I told Wendy this the other day. There were a bunch of his movies that when I was a kid, if it was on TV, I was glued to the set.
Yes.
Most notably the one where he plays seven characters in a movie, and I don't remember what the movie is.
Which Way to the Front?
No, did that in Which Way to the Front, I think, too.
Family Jewels.
Family Jewels,
yes.
That's the one. So when I was a kid, boy, would that make me laugh. And then when I got to be 8 or 9, I'd watch it again, and I didn't laugh at all.
Your taste had become more sophisticated by fourth grade.
Yeah,
did you
so.
Think he was funny? Because I have found myself saying, has he ever been funny? It just didn't appeal to me.
I guess I look at him historically. And then, so when I look at the early Martin and Lewis pictures are hilarious.
Yeah, they are.
Even today.
They are.
To me. And then the Cinder Feller and Disorderly Orderly and Nutty Professor, I think are funny.
Nutty Professor has an extra layer to it because it's really dark.
Does. Yeah. Have you ever seen The Bellboy?
Yeah.
That's the one I would recommend as far as solo Jerry is concerned.
All right, I'll watch it and get back to you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's different. And it's very... show business in 1960, which I enjoy.
The moment that was the most Jerry Lewis moment ever for me was he was on with David Letterman one time, and David's asking him something serious.
Yes.
And he goes, David, would you like to see my Pride and Joy? And David goes, yeah, sure. And he brings out a photograph of Pride and Joy dish detergents.
That's an old bit.
Of course it is. But I just went, it's so amazing that a guy on network TV would stop a serious question for that.
You think about his roots, man. He was vaudeville.
Yeah.
His father, Danny Lewis, was in vaudeville.
Yeah.
And he, in 46, was doing basically a vaudeville act where he was miming records a la Andy Kaufman.
Right.
And that's when he met Dean, you know. It was a mobbed-owned club in Atlantic City, the 500. And he and Dean were doing solo acts. They knew each other from New York. But the mob guy comes back and says, if you guys don't get together, I'm going to fire the both of you.
Mm-hmm.
They wrote their first act on a piece of butcher paper, and that's what launched it.
See, knowing the history changes my view a little bit. I mean,
it's
he really
cool.
was ahead of his time.
Yes, he was. Absolutely.
And that was the perfect partnership because you kind of had polar opposites. You had a very talented, great singing guy and just, you know, a guy just being a loon, and it worked.
and Dean was a funny guy, but it was a contrast funny, you know.
Yeah.
Still smooth funny. It wasn't like he didn't want to make himself look bad at all, and Jerry didn't care.
Yeah, amazing. All right, Patrick McDonald is here. We're discussing film. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Still laughing, it's Wendy Snyder along with Patrick McDonald. Patrick is a film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. He's also the chief guide for the Chicago Film Tour. You want to go to ChicagoFilmTour.com or call them at 312-593-4455. I just saw the announcement.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, you're welcome. I just saw the announcement yesterday that there's going to be a new Joker movie,
yes.
and it'll have to do with the beginnings of the Joker, how the Joker became the Joker.
Yes.
And there's a big name attached that I don't think we've ever seen attached to a superhero movie before.
Marty Scorsese is going to be the producer on that. But they have The Hangovers, Todd Phillips directing, so watch out. No.
So that would indicate probably a comedic slant on this, right?
Well, I think what they're trying to expand upon is, and this is not going to be part of the DC universe. This whole obsession with the universe now is really bizarre, but you know, the DC is establishing a universe which will continue this fall in Justice League.
Yeah.
And of course, the Marvel universe is fairly established.
Yeah.
So this is just going to be a separate story. In fact, they probably will not have Jared Leto playing the part. They'll have a new actor taking it on. But if we remember from the comic books, he falls into a vat of acid.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's why his features become a clown face.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts with a red hood on his head.
Oh.
You know, and then reveals himself as the Joker. Yeah. So that's from the...
Don't we already know that, though?
We do already know that.
Yes. But, you know, in the original Batman with Michael Keaton, it turned out that Nicholson's Joker was actually the guy who killed Batman's parents.
Right.
Oh,
in the comics,
yeah.
That guy is Joe Chill.
Yeah.
And in that one, it happened to be Nicholson's character.
You should change your name to that, Joe Chill. It's pretty cool.
Bill Chill.
Joe Chill in the morning.
I would like to be Bill Chill.
Bill Chill in the morning.
And then when Heath Ledger played the Joker, every time he told what happened to him, he gave a different account, right? During the movie, doesn't he say 3 or 4 different times how his face got to be like that?
He was amazing.
Yeah, he was something.
Except so with the...
Yeah, right. Yeah. He had some dry mouth.
It was crazy.
That's
town.
Why he was so crazy.
My friend David Desmalchian, who was in his gang the movie, I was directly asking him, did you see an effect on Heath Ledger when he played the Joker? And he said, no, he did not. So
he said
he would be in the makeup and he'd be clowning around or just being a normal person. It wasn't like he was staying in character and desperately making himself that crazy guy, which again led to his accidental overdose. So
what a great actor.
He was really good in that.
Amazing.
Brokeback Mountain. I mean, I can't believe what a great actor he was.
Yeah. And then just gone with the wind, man.
Very sad. All right, a couple movies opening this week. Let's start out with Leap. What is Leap?
Leap is an animated film, and this will be good for all those people who have daughters who want to get into ballet. And let me bring that up. There it is. Has the voices of Elle Fanning, Nat Wolff, Carly Rae Jepsen, the singer, the great Mel Brooks, and Kate McKinnon. 3.5 out of 5. It's a sappy story, but it's a kid's movie. I'm not going to sit there as a middle-aged man and try to judge something like this.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that it has some beautiful choreography and ballet moves in total animation. You're just like... But it's one of those animated films that are sort of photorealistic. So, you know, their faces are so blank.
So
don't give me a close-up on those things.
Are there boys dancers? I need to know that.
In the movie? No, this is purely little girls. They're auditioning for Nutcracker. So they're auditioning for the main little girl's role in Nutcracker.
Is there a little boy dancers too?
There's a Russian prince who's a dancer in it, and he likes the ladies, so... Which is very unusual in the dancing world, I think.
Is that right? Yeah.
I don't know.
so good for kids,
hairdresser.
But adults maybe lost on adults.
Yeah, right? I mean, you know, I think adults will get into the beauty of the film, but kids, especially the little girls and little boys who are studying dance, will really like it, I think.
The next one is one I keep seeing previews for, and it looks fantastic. I hope it is. The only living boy in New York
City. It is. 4 out of 5. I love anything set in New York. And this is modern New York. You know, this is the New York that is Disneyfied, and of course they have the dinner party where everybody's complaining about that, which includes Wally Shawn. So you know you're in a New York movie now.
From My Dinner with Andre.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he always appears in the Woody Allen movies at the dinner table, especially in Melinda.
Yeah.
And anyway, the story involves Jeff Bridges as sort of a dude character. In fact, he narrates a film, and when the narration started, speaking of Ed Asner, I thought it was Ed Asner.
Oh, yeah?
His voice is turned into Ed Asner's voice.
Kind of grumbly.
Grumbly, you know, the Lou Grant voice. And But he plays a mentor to a kid who lives in the same apartment building. And then there's a mystery associated with that. But the kid finds out that his father is having an affair with a younger woman. Ugh. And it involves him, you know, getting involved in that situation. So those kind of counterbalance stories tells the whole aspect. They're all going to come together at some point. And it's just, you know, it's a literary story. It's the only living boy in New York City is the title of the book that is being worked on as they're going through the story. So it's,
and aside from Jeff Bridges, it's a pretty strong cast, right?
Yes. We have Thomas Callum, a newcomer who plays the young man, but it's Kate Beckinsale, Cynthia Nixon, Pierce Brosnan, who is doing fantastic character roles now. I mean, Pierce Brosnan is probably in the best time in his career. He's post-Bond. He's post all that TV stuff he did.
No more Remington Steele.
And he'll take a role that, you know, he likes. And
good.
He knocks out of the park usually, and he did in this one as well. So 4 out of 5 for Only Living Boy in New York City. And, of course, Terminator 2.
In 3D this time.
In 3D.
Didn't we already have Terminator 2?
Yes, in 1991.
But they're just bringing it back. They've 3D'd it, so you can see it.
We're
in
back
3D
to
now.
The 90s now. Yeah. Yes. So, James.
Good, your wardrobe will fit in. Bill.
Yeah, excellent. I'll get in for half price.
I like the 80s more, but.
Patrick, thanks so much for coming up. It's Patrick McDonald, everybody, film critic over at HollywoodChicago.com, a great website, and also chief guide for Chicago Film Tour. ChicagoFilmTour.com has all your information.
Thank
Have a
you,
good
Patrick.
Weekend.
It's always great.
More after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN.